Hi, you're listening to the Cars and Crafts Radio Show here on KPPF Radio 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM. Every Sunday at 2 p.m., we have a great lineup for you today. Visit Montservino Urban Winery at 4655 Town Center Drive, Suite 130 near Platt and Murray, and spend time,
like we did,
with Matt and Katie in their cozy tasting room sampling beautifully made wines
and handcrafted Boxing Brothers hard cider.
Come find your favorite.
Join us on the air and online.
Cars and Crafts and KPPF remind you to drink responsibly.
And stop by and see Jim and his wife. They're there every day. And Remy, the poodle, at his shop, Reincarnation, Colorado Springs. The address?
6085 Terminal Avenue.
Every week, we'll chat with an ambitious achiever.
Or two.
In the local world of cars and handcrafted adult beverages. Here on Cars and Crafts with your hosts, Linda.
And David.
On KPPF, the power
of people.
Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, David. Welcome to Cars and Crafts, everybody. We're in the studio, and we've got a great lineup for you today. You're listening to KPPF Radio, 98.5, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM. What do we have going on today?
Our good friend, Jim, is here. Jim has a high-end restoration business here in town. Jim and I have known each other for a number of years, and we'll get to this story, but he actually finished a car for my family. Very impressive. And Linda and I made a point to stop by Jim's shop last week and invite him to come on the show. He was gracious enough to be here. Say hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
You had a comment when we left his shop. Do you remember what you said?
I don't remember what I said. I was thoroughly impressed. I loved the shop. I don't have the words to say what it was. It was impressive.
Thank you.
You said it was clean, neat, organized.
A lot of people, when they leave, I've heard them say, that guy really drools a lot.
She didn't say that.
I did not say
I'm
that.
Not
Those
sure.
are not the
yeah,
words.
And
that
I'm
came
not
out of
sure,
mouth.
You know, to whom they're referring. Because
no,
there's a half dozen of us working.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen that many cars being put together or dismantled at the same time. I don't know.
Both.
It was great.
Good.
They may have been talking about Remy drooling, by the way.
We pay Remy to drool. Nice. He's the greater, our standard poodle.
So typically at this point in the show, Linda and I talk about Formula One, and there was no Formula One race since the last time we recorded. However,
right.
Jim turns out is a big Formula One fan. So what are your thoughts on Formula One so far this year?
Well, I'm a big fan. It's the only racing I watch, and I'm up way too many Sundays at 5:30 in the morning.
That's the time to watch it.
Yeah, to catch them live out of Europe, and then 11 at night if they're back over in the Far East. But I love it. It's the only racing where I think you find truly the technology passes on to what you and I are going to drive in 5 years. When they came up with electric differentials, we all thought they were crazy. Now half our cars have them. When they came up with hybrid technology, electric augmenting power with electric motors, we thought they were crazy. I drove a Tesla here today. So they're obviously not crazy. These guys are way ahead of the curve, these engineers. And of course, the drivers, the eye-hand coordination. Don't ever play mumbly peg with these guys.
Exactly.
They'll hurt you. I think it's the best form of racing out there.
I think it's part of the plan when they design the rules for Formula One to make them as progressive as possible, to think ahead as much as possible, because you're right. There's a lot of breakthrough technology, especially with this current version with the small V6 and the battery assist. Do you have an opinion about Hamilton, Verstappen, or any of that that's been going on?
Well, you know, who doesn't always root for the underdogs? So the Flying Dutchman's a big hit. Plus, my Verhe is a Dutch name, so I'm kind of obligated to be a fan of
his.
And Lewis has been a little cocky the last, 20 years? But
is that all?
He's deserved
it.
He's earned it, you know?
Undeniably, he's made, you could count his mistakes on one hand.
Yeah. Over his career.
Over his
Not
career.
Not just a season.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
He's the definition of perfection behind the wheel, and he very seldom loses his temper.
He has the chance this season to break the all-time record for Formula One championships. When Schumacher did it 15 years ago, 20 years ago, whenever it was, it seemed shocking that anybody could do, he won seven. That seemed unbelievable.
Yes.
Especially when Fangio, that's another great story. We could do a whole show on Fangio.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't think that anyone would ever break Fangio's record. I think he had five or six championships.
Well, much as we don't think anybody will break Hamilton's record.
That's right.
It'll happen. The question is whether or not we'll still be here. But yeah, it's a technologically, it's a marvel to watch.
We've been talking a lot about Lando Norris and George Russell.
Oh, talent.
Yeah.
Big, young talent. But we have to remember that's where the Flying Dutchman started. That's where Hamilton started. They were very young when they got their start in F1. And Lando Norris on the podium, I had to look him up. Who is this guy? It's crazy. They exactly. come out of nowhere. And not everybody's father is a fashion designer out of Canada. You
nice
know,
Lance
somebody's got to grab these kids out yeah. of training.
Yeah.
Their dad didn't buy the team. So I'm impressed.
There's a bunch of great talent that's coming up. It's emerging. Pierre Gasly has done a great job.
Sure. Well, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about the 20 best drivers on the planet, that's a pretty elite group to be honored to join. These kids are very lucky.
Very lucky.
Yeah.
The cars are very complicated. I think, you know, the cars are computer games, right? You have to be 19, 20 mm-hmm. years old to keep up with all the buttons on the steering wheel and drive the car at the same time. Kudos to Raikkonen and some of these guys who can still keep up with the technology and still hustle the car around the track under 4, 5, 6 G loads, under braking and cornering in many cases. It's outstanding.
And people have no clue, David, what that means to be under 4 or 5 or 6 G's of pressure on your body while you're thinking and hitting the paddles and adjusting your boost and adjusting your programs. When they show it on TV live from the cockpit, I'm still looking for Mario. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's true. Their steering wheel really does look like a little
it's remote. Unbelievable. It's,
yeah, it's amazing.
I've heard figures of as to what those steering wheels are worth. And it's well, it's more than I'll make this year, that's for sure.
Well, we'll talk about that later, how much money you actually make. That's a joke. How long have you been a fan of Formula One? How long have you been watching?
I watched Mario win at Watkins Glen in 78. So actually, I saw Richie Ginther run at Watkins Glen in a Honda, I want to say a V16 mm-hmm. in 65 or 6. I'd have to look that one up. That was my first F1 race.
Were you there? Or
oh, yeah. No, I was there.
Oh, nice. Way cool.
Oh, and that was the first time we'd ever heard an engine, anything like that, because everything was a Cosworth 4-cam V8.
Right.
Until then. And all of a sudden, the Japanese come in with this, I do have to look it up, V12 or V16, mid-engine. It sounded like a bee. It was like an SNL skit. You know, the killer bees are here. And unbelievable. And that was just the tip of the iceberg.
It could have easily been a 2.5 or 3 liter at most V12.
Yeah.
Probably with 11 or 12,000 RPM redline, even back in the age you're talking about, 1977 or 76 or something like that.
Which compared to a Cosworth 4-cam was probably half again the RPMs.
Exactly.
That the Cosworth produced.
Exactly.
And they were a great and dependable and affordable engine. It's too bad the affordable part's so far gone, because now you've got to be worth hundreds of millions to race.
Yeah.
And that's that. There's no two ways about
that. And they're so intent on bringing in manufacturers.
Yes.
You know, like the Williams team that Frank Williams started, and Eddie Jordan with his team, and all these guys. I mean, those days are gone.
And then don't forget Frank's daughter, who was a personal hero to me.
Yeah.
How she kept the Williams team going, I have no idea. This girl must be one heck of a salesperson.
I was always upset when she got criticism because the Williams team was underperforming.
Oh,
and they blamed
please.
Her just because she was a woman with the headset on. That really bothered me. So it's nice to hear you say that.
Yeah, she gets all the kudos available.
Claire Williams, I think.
From me. Yeah. It's not a woman's sport, and she went out there and broke that rule from day one.
Frank Williams is an amazing story unto himself. Senna was in a Williams when he died, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Frank had another driver of that caliber who died in one of his cars. Frank himself has been in a wheelchair for 50 years.
Since that, I think, rollover crash in the Alps or something.
Yeah, road car accident.
Yeah, road car, exactly. Yeah.
But he was a racing driver himself.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But just the stubborn, I don't know how else to phrase it, the stubborn perseverance of that man to do what he did in a world as intense as Formula One, which broke many men in many different ways, financially, physically, spiritually, and so many of his peers are no longer with us. They just didn't make it out of that era. We were losing, there was one point in Formula One, we were losing 5-6 guys a year.
Oh, drivers were expendable. And today you look at the likes, not to say he's not an amazing man, but like Toto Wolff.
Yeah.
Here's a guy that can run the best team on the planet, no problem. But if his nose gets out of joint, he'll be gone. Here's a guy that knows nothing. None of the team managers today know what Frank Williams or any of these guys went through.
That's That's right. He's a good corporate boss.
Tremendous.
Which is different.
Obviously the best right now.
Yeah, which is different. Zach Brown, though, is, I think, giving him a run for his money.
Yes.
Quite frankly. You know, I guess Toto has some chops behind the wheel. I guess Zach Brown has some chops behind the wheel. They're not total neophytes. They're not just button pushers into corporate, but they're not Frank Williams. They're not Eddie Jordan. They're not these guys.
Yeah. They were legends. And again, will we ever see the likes of them again? I don't think so, because I think it's too specialized.
Yeah.
Each person now has this segment of that overall description, job description, and this person has that, and so on, which makes it obviously way more efficient. We see that every other Sunday. But yeah, the good old days are history.
I'm always surprised when they start talking about the titles when they talk to this is the sporting director and the,
and
the team manager.
Yeah, and what do you do?
Yeah.
And what is your job?
Yeah, how are you different than the guy you're sitting next to?
Yeah. I don't even try to understand. But and they do pretty good interviews. The TV coverage is pretty good, except where you have to mute it for the first three laps because the announcer is, wow, his wife
David
can't
Croft.
Get out like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a piece of work.
I don't know how he does it. I don't know how you can talk that fast and that loud. And he's somewhat articulate.
And be somewhat accurate. But I can't take it. I mute the first three or four laps or history. I just don't listen. I can't take it.
It's too much.
He's way too excited for me.
Did you have an opinion on the announcers or what you get from the broadcast?
I think they're great. I love listening to the announcers. Yeah. They talk fast enough for me to understand and I can keep up with what they're saying. So for me, it's I enjoy the first couple laps. I really do.
Yeah, but see, you're young. I'm so old, I have to use the on-screen, what do you call it, subtitles.
Yes.
Right.
And they crash and burn about four words into his first three laps.
Okay.
They can't even try to keep up. So I'll go get a cup of coffee or something.
I love listening to the accents. I love listening to the different lingos and all of that stuff is just fun for me.
Yep, well, it's so English. Like, Martin Brundle.
Yep.
I was a huge Martin Brundle fan when he was a driver. It's nice to be able to listen to him every time he calls the race.
True.
I really like listening. You and I have talked about this, Linda, the Indian guy.
The young guy.
Karuk Chandon.
With the perfect physique.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that guy's in shape. And can he drive a car?
Yeah.
I've seen him on these other shows where they test drive cars. This guy's a natural. It's too bad he's not still in the circuit, but of course he's pushing. Got to be 30, so he's too old.
He's out of it. He's long gone.
Yeah, he's way too old.
But I've learned that my favorite foreign accent to speak English is the Indian accent. I just think
I
it's
agree.
Absolutely beautiful. It's just
I
absolutely
agree.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, I agree.
Very
Couldn't
good.
Agree more.
So where's the next race? I know that there's one coming up this weekend. Where are we going? Where is it at? What's happening?
It's in Turkey.
Okay.
I think this is the first time we've been to Turkey, maybe in 50 years, maybe ever. I don't know. I don't know anything about the track. We're going to learn more this week coming up
on
the F1 broadcast.
Well, and the big question among all of us is, will the turkeys be racing?
Nice.
And can they keep up? Will they be hazardous to the cars? Who knows? This is yet to be seen.
The turkey trot.
Trot. There you go. Thank you, Linda.
A new version of the sprint. The sprint qualifying, right? You got to beat the turkey.
That's awesome.
Well, it's getting to be the right time of year. They're only a month ahead.
That's right.
And they only have a month left to live. So we, let them run.
Yeah.
Let them compete.
Yeah. He's not going to get a pass at the White House.
Any more about F1?
I'm good.
Okay.
You guys are great.
Valtteri Bottas, one of my favorite drivers of all time. You probably know his wife is an Olympic level swimmer for Finland.
Yeah.
And I love this guy. I've always loved this guy. It's not easy to find a guy with that kind of talent who is happy in second every week.
Right.
And he is. He's a team player. He's a fabulous driver. And he's getting dumped out on the street.
Well,
I think he's going to Williams next year, isn't he?
No. Alfa Romeo, I believe.
Oh, okay. You're right. Yeah. Alfa.
He's going to sit next to Giovinazzi.
Who is Alfa?
Yeah. And I heard Alfa's getting a Mercedes engine possibly.
I was going to say, are they Mercedes?
Because
or
Alfa's owned by Ferrari. The brand is, I don't understand how this works, but
there's no telling. I don't try anymore.
Yeah. But you're right about Bottas. Bottas had a great career coming up through F1. He drove some slower, bad cars in the back and he drove them extremely well. There's a lot of guys like this who choose to be number two. How can you turn down a seat at Mercedes, right? But you're going to be the number two when they say you're equal, but you're not.
And you mentioned Kimi earlier. He's the only driver out there who I think, not unlike myself, is still possibly looking for Mario.
Nice.
On the dashboard.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a possibility. And this is his last year, he announced, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's retired.
It's about time. And the guy's had a great career.
Talk about an antique. He's got to be mid-30s.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorites, especially some of the, leave me alone, I know what I'm doing,
Great responses.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Iceman.
Yeah, the Iceman.
He's good.
Yeah.
You can't talk the talk if you're not walking the walk.
Yeah, we like Kimi. All right, any more about?
I'll pop in many times. times. Don't worry.
Okay. Very good.
Interrupting's the name of the game.
So we had news from Tesla this week that they exceeded their production forecast or their production expectations, because it's Wall Street that decides if you're successful or not. And they delivered over 260,000 cars last quarter, or whatever last quarter was measured, which exceeded expectations. So Tesla stock shot up yet again. So this is following on our recent segment that we did about electric vehicles, which I liked a lot and I learned a lot about. And Jim showed up in a Tesla today. Linda's family has a Tesla. Linda and I went and drove the Ford Mach-E, they call it a Mustang, this week. So there's more information to talk about electric vehicles. And Jim, you're here because you have opinions on everything. And your wife has a Tesla, which you drove today. But go ahead. I'll be quiet.
Tesla has re-engineered the wheel. This guy, let's face it, anybody who can send a rocket into space with a payload, launch it, and then the rocket returns,
and
lands.
Bring it back.
We'll use it again next month.
Okay.
This guy is not human. And he's well beyond what I can understand or ever hope to. And for him to build a car, this is like a toy, I think, to him, project. But he put his best into it, and look what he made.
It's amazing.
He designed this car years ago. And every time I'm behind the wheel, I just am in awe.
He's genius.
We'll talk more about that. Because you and I are dinosaur burners from way back. We really enjoy that part of cars.
Speak for myself.
Yeah. So tell me about the Tesla experience, coming from your perspective.
It does everything perfectly. It's the quietest ride. It's the quietest car. There is no engine noise. You have to make that yourself. And
Do you do that when you drive?
Right. I do it all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. I seldom use the radio. I'm too busy shifting and making the noises. But it goes like a bat out of you know where, and it's all-wheel drive, and it's so comfortable, and it's very attractive. I don't buy many cars for their looks.
You have a Model S, right?
Yes.
The Model S is very pretty. When that car first came out, I liked it a lot.
I like the 3. I like the X. He hasn't made a mistake yet.
The 3, the nose on the 3 bothers me. It looks like a duck bill. I don't care what the nose
it does, but we've got vinyl guys next door to us at the shop, and all it lacks is a smile with one blacked out front tooth.
Oh, is that what fixes it?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Mine will have it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Mine will have a smile with one dead tooth.
Outstanding.
And it'll be the best. Everybody will say, I've seen that
car.
Who's that? The 3 is, it's just a more affordable version.
Yeah.
Which is
a little smaller than the S.
I was in the back of had an Uber pick me up, and he brought whatever the Falcon wing door is
X.
Okay. Yep. And I was sitting in back. It wasn't impressive. The seat racked around and made noise. It felt like those little plastic chairs that you get stuck in the doctor's waiting room sometimes.
Huh.
Yeah, it didn't really work for me. But that was, I think, the first time that I was in an electric car. And I'm segueing into us driving the Mach-E this week. You had a particular opinion about it.
Well, my expectations were a little bit higher just because it was a Mustang. It was supposed to be a Mustang. And it's electric. So I was kind of excited about it. But it wasn't great. I mean, we drove it around for a while, took it on the interstate. And same story as before. Or, flooring the car, you expect a certain pushback into the seat. And I didn't really get that.
It doesn't.
I didn't get it.
We even had it in unbridled mode, Jim. Mustang.
A cute expression for a Mustang. The fact that an American electric car is disappointing is hardly a surprise to me. It takes us a long time to copy foreign technology well, even if you don't consider Elon Musk foreign. I do, because I'm not sure he's from this planet, but it's going to take us a while to catch up. I'm interested to see how the F-150 fares, because if we can change pickup drivers, into that everything you want and more to electric vehicles, that's going to have quite an effect on the marketplace.
You're absolutely correct.
And it's going to take
Ford knew that. That's why they chose the F-150, and that was their leading edge. And I didn't have any complaints about the build quality.
No.
Or the fit and finish of the Mach-E.
It was nice. It looked
pretty.
Good.
The interior was nice.
Yeah. It was from aesthetically, it was great. But driving it,
it didn't have any pop.
What's it cost?
We couldn't figure it out. They had that covered up on the sticker. I'm going to guess low 40s, but that's just a guess.
Well, again, you get back to the you get what you pay for theory, which is hardly always true. But on that one, it may be when you compare it to a Tesla. That's half the price of what I drove today.
And I have a favorite set of corners that was close by that I like to use. And I run through there in my dinosaur burning Mustang quite often. And so we took her through there, and it immediately went into understeer at higher speed. And and first thing I said to her is, it's not a Mustang.
It wasn't built for that.
Right. And I wish they wouldn't call it a Mustang.
I don't understand it.
It was a marketing thing.
Yeah. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
But whatever.
It's the ploy to get them in. It's the ploy to get the dinosaurs in.
Exactly.
It's a start. If it brings dinosaurs like us into the marketplace, it's up to assignment level.
Yeah, that's good, guys. That was very good. That's a good place to wrap this up. Jim, thanks for your thoughts on F1 electric vehicles. Linda, as always, it's a pleasure. And we'll be back shortly.
We welcome and encourage your emails to cars.crafts013@gmail.com.
This program, Cars and Crafts, showcases local gearheads along with brewers and distillers. Join us on the air and online.
Cars and Crafts and KPPF remind you to drink responsibly. Welcome back. You're listening to Cars and Crafts with Linda and David.
And Jim Verhey
and
of
Jim.
Reincarnation. Jim, welcome.
That would be me. Reincarnation is a local company here. We've been here for going on 20 years. Was in Vail before that and for many, many years. But you can only tear up so many knees and you get tired of the cold. We just do restoration and repair antique vehicles, sports cars, classic cars. We do a lot of British cars. We do a lot of muscle cars, domestic cars. And we do a lot of really oddball cars. That being said, you can walk through the shop any day and see cars I guarantee you haven't seen in 30 or 40 years. And I got five guys working who just love what they do. And I'd like to think we're pretty competent at it. We sure are busy, so no complaints here. The restoration business has been falling on its face for a while because of demographics. And that, unfortunately, is only going to get worse. At age 71, I'm leading this group to the old folks' home, making plans to move to Florida, possibly later today. But
that's awesome.
But that aside, it's just tough. And if you've got a really old car and it breaks, and you've looked for someone to fix it and have not found us, you have had your share of challenges and the angst that goes along with it. Because most of the mechanics out there today were not even down the birthing canal when your car was built. And that doesn't give you very good odds at the restoration, at the repair shop.
Famously, in one of your better promotions, when you used to be at a different location, you built the 50-50 car. Tell us about that.
Took a 56 Chevy Bel Air that was sitting on the side of a road dead here in town. And I went and knocked on the door because it obviously was for sale. And I say obviously, there's a sign in the windshield and this thing hadn't moved in years. And I bought it for about the price of lunch. And we decided to restore one side of it. And we restored the driver's side because obviously, where do you think I'm going to sit? And my wife has always wondered why I didn't restore the right side as she's sitting on the unrestored front bench seat and all the stuffing coming out of it.
Looking at that car and being familiar with cars, Jim,
yeah,
it had to be twice as hard to restore half a car as to do the entire car.
It is actually a little tougher. It would be easier to do the whole car. But we were under the gun. We had a show coming up. This is back when we had shows at the Phil Long Center up in Briargate.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a real cash cow. That show brought in customers like no other and went on for years and years. It's been gone for years and years now. But we had 2 weeks to that show when I bought that Chevy.
Wow.
And we ripped that thing apart the day it came in. And I sent off, you know, here are my bumpers, chrome just the left side. Here's the engine, steam clean it.
They were
just
crazy
paint
about
the left
you.
Side. They couldn't believe what I was doing.
Yeah.
And we pulled it off and we were at the show with that car virtually done
in two weeks
later. Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, I amazed myself. We had everybody
on board. You were much younger then.
A little bit. And this had to be a dozen years ago, easily. Mm-hmm. And we're taking that to a show right here on Academy on Saturday. We take that car to all sorts of shows.
Wow.
And as you know, car shows have been in very low supply in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
With COVID thing, exactly.
Right. It's made a dent.
So we're gonna brave it. I got my booster Thursday. The hell with that COVID.
Uh-oh.
We were, good for you. We were in your shop. You had a corral of Mustangs, I think three mid-60s cars. You had a couple of E-types, which we'll talk more about. You had like a 30 Model A something
a
like
truck
that.
Truck in there too somewhere.
Yeah,
truck
a couple
two.
Trucks. Yeah, a couple of 50s
trucks.
Fords.
Yep.
Yeah. You mentioned you'd done some real oddball stuff. Tell us about some of the more oddball cars or trucks.
We're doing a 26 REO Speedwagon, which was not the name of a music group in 1926. Although the guitar player I saw on TV the other day, and I'm not convinced he wasn't alive then.
He's got dentures, and he's still singing teenage sappy love songs. It's hard to watch. It's tough.
stuff. You gotta love them to watch. But anyway, this REO Speedwagon, the owner wanted to go crate engine tranny front end, rear end, but he also wanted to widen it a foot because the trucks back in 26 were very narrow, and he wanted to lengthen it about 3 feet so he could bring his grandchildren along.
It's crazy.
Needed a back seat.
It's crazy.
And so we did all that, and we're in primer now and just about ready to go into paint. He's using French Racing Blue. Blue's my favorite color, so that's a big hit with me.
You did an MG within that color recently, or close to that
just
color.
Just sold it on Bring a Trailer 2 weeks ago.
Nice.
To a gentleman in California. In any event, so that'll be in color here shortly, and it'll be on tour next year, and that's really going to be something. That's the wildest car we've done in a long time.
Wow. I had a question for you, because, you know, I don't see Bugattis and that kind of stuff in your shop. What's the most valuable, exotic?
We have a customer in Dubai who is a Ferrari collector. He doesn't own anything newer other than the occasional Enzo. He's got an Enzo. He's got a couple of the remarkable new ones, but most of his cars are 60s and older, which is something to say on Ferraris. He's got 100 Ferraris.
Wow.
You can't even guess what the price tag would be. I can't. He's a Pakistani gentleman. Nobody's from Dubai. He has flown us over, and we've visited there, and you meet a lot of interest. Interesting people, incredibly wealthy. But the only natives to Dubai are single or double humpers. They're camels. There were no people there. It was just a bunch of camels. Then they decided, let's make this a port or whatever. However they came to the decision and invested billions, trillions, there we were. All of a sudden, it's the most amazing city in the world. Well, we've done a couple Ferraris for him. Talk about a money is no object restoration. And they are breathtaking. We did two different models of the 250 GT. Great customer, great collection of cars. We got invited to we took an American muscle car on one of these trips to the Kuwait Concours. If you happen to Google Kuwait Concours 2016 and look on the muscle car stage, you'll see a gangrene is what I call the color, a bright green 1970 Plymouth Superbird.
Wow.
And that we built here for a member of the DuPont family and who collects primarily airplanes, but also muscle cars.
What engine was in that Superbird?
440.
It was 440. Okay.
Yeah, pretty standard fare back then.
Right. It's the right engine for that car. I mean, the Hemi's desirable, but the 440 is a great motor.
Exactly. And it goes like stink, and it has all the noises, rattles, and smells. It's such a Mopar.
That 2016 Kuwait show, was that where they debuted the that lime green one-off Bugatti that was custom built in Canada? You know the car I'm talking about, out of magnesium?
I do, but it wasn't there. I don't recall where that show, which show that was. The guy who runs, I don't know if you call him an emirate or we just called him Sir. The guy who runs the country, Kuwait, whatever his proper title is, super nice gentleman, and he collects cars, and he has a 2,000 car collection. So once a year, generally in March, he invites 5 cars from each country that he favors. I don't know how the choices are made. It doesn't matter. From around the globe. No, he invites you. And if you accept, he then, Lloyds of London, literally Lloyds of London gets a hold of you and they come look at the car and do an estimate. And you and the owner agree on the value of the car. They insure it. They throw it in a container. It goes to Niki Lauda Air, which is the series.
Wow.
Of 747s. People wonder, how do the F1 cars happen to be in a different country every week?
Well,
Niki Lauda Air.
Okay.
They take them all to the airport and they go in 747s and they move the whole fam damn.
He famously started that airline, I think, before he was even out of his driver's suit.
Correct.
Yeah. Really forward-thinking, really brilliant guy. We just lost him recently, didn't we?
Yeah, last year.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the movie with him and James Hunt, it's excellent. The story is just fantastic. And that whole visual with him in the car that's burning, and I forget the driver that saved him, basically pulled him out of the car. Yep. Just incredible. And then, you've had some health issues, Jim, and you've had that lavage treatment. You told me about it within the last couple of years. Niki had that like 4 times a day for 2 years straight or something.
Yeah, he... he lived through some god-awful challenges. And what's his name? Opie? Ron Howard?
Yeah.
Did a bang-up job. Car movies.
As he always does.
As he always does, exactly. But car movies are not known for being big profit.
That's right.
Productions.
Nor very good, typically.
No,
there's like
no,
three we can think of, right?
Yeah, Steve McQueen is a personal hero of mine, but a movie maker, he wasn't.
Right.
But I watched that movie at least two or three times a year.
Yeah.
Just to watch the Ferrari 512 P's and the Porsche 917s. And a plethora of Lolas and everything else.
What did you think about the Ford versus Ferrari movie that came out a couple years ago or recently?
Oh, a buddy of mine, Tim, calls that Ford Beats Ferrari. How can you not love that movie?
Yeah.
Especially when Junior, Ford 2, I think he pretty much peed his pants in the passenger side.
Yeah.
When they took him for a ride.
I don't know if that was historically accurate, but cinematically it was fantastic.
Hysterical.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's fairly close to reality and some great racing scenes.
Yeah.
You know, even though they're all basically faked, you can't make this stuff for real anymore, but they did a bang up job.
Well, we get spoiled too with all the in-car cameras and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So to make a movie that shows us something we haven't seen before, really, really difficult to do.
Well, and just a throwback to our F1 discussion, if you watch the in-car cameras on F1 and you can watch all the trackside cameras you want of F1 until you physically go to a race, and there's one coming up in Texas, folks. If you go to a race, any race, you will not believe the reality of what you're seeing on those cameras.
Years ago, I used to live in Southern California, and a buddy of mine worked with Toyota, so we went to the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach every year. And the first time I was there, I remember standing down at the end of the main straight right before they get to the fountain corner. It was a little configured a little different in those days. But I'm standing there going, lift, lift. They are just charging so deep in the corner. And they get, it looks like a picnic table away from the corner before they get on the brakes. And this is an Indy car, which has probably half the braking capacity of a Formula One car these
days. Even back in 1980.
Yeah.
I happened to be at that race then. And they had a Formula One race in Las Vegas about that year.
That was ridiculous.
It was
in the parking
absurd.
Lot of Caesar's Palace.
Right.
That was,
How many hay bales can you get?
That's right. That was so
it was
so
still
stupid.
Fun.
Yeah.
You know, who doesn't have fun in Vegas? But
you were talking earlier about nobody really understands G-forces. And a Formula One car, I think, will generate up to 6 Gs under braking.
Yes.
One of the things about Formula One drivers and race drivers in general that people don't really understand is the neck muscles that you have to have, because your head weighs 15 pounds, somebody correct me, about as much of a small bowling ball, and then you put a helmet on it, they're super light these days, but still, so you've got 20 pounds above your shoulders, so at 6 G's, that's 120 pounds that's trying to leave your neck through the windshield of the car.
Every corner. And every acceleration and every brake.
And every lateral.
And it does happen to be, in most people, the control center for the driving. So you really can't afford to lose it, the head. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I think that's why AJ Foyt was so successful, because, you know, he had no neck. His head was bolted directly at his shoulders.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, even like Kimi Raikkonen at his ripe old age of, 42, whatever he is. I mean, his development in his neck is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But when you think about what they go through and what your body's going through in those kind of conditions, very impressive.
These guys are in shape.
Let's talk more about your cars at Reincarnation. You've built some cool cars for yourself. You sold some recently. I have to tell you, though, one of my favorite cars, and I've got a buddy of mine in mind that I want to bring over and meet you and take on that project, is the 56 with the Viper motor. Tell us about that. What made you think about that? Where that came from?
I had too much money at the time, and I've always been a 56 Chevy fan because my father was a Chevy dealer after Studebaker failed after the war in 56, and he got into a Chevy dealership same year. And the first car I ever remember him, I was a young lad, he drove home a 56 Bel Air Tudor hardtop. So I've always wanted to build one kind of in his memory. Oddly enough, he passed away 20 years ago yesterday, right after 9/11. That aside, I'm now building on an Art Morrison chassis, which is pretty much the benchmark of custom chassis, and has been for about 20, 30 years, whatever. And I wanted something different for a drivetrain, so I bought a wrecked Viper and took the drivetrain from that and all the computers and dash and everything else, and we've grafted it into this 56 two-door hardtop. Now all I need is sufficient time to finish it.
Yeah. And how hard was it to get that 8-liter V10 to fit between the nose and the firewall in that 56? How much?
Not easy. Yeah. We so far, we've had to sacrifice the air conditioning, but that will be brought back somehow. It was the only accessory on the engine that I couldn't fit.
Did you have to push back the firewall? Did you have to push the nose out? Did you have to lengthen the frame rails up front?
Almost a foot.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the firewall. A Viper engine is, you'd think it's just one more cylinder on each side, and it is mathematically, but oh my God, it's a long engine.
Yeah, it's a monster.
It is.
It's all cast iron. It's really old school.
Yes.
It started as a truck block.
Two valve. It's a dinosaur.
It is a dinosaur.
But it's got a lot of inches.
Perfect
and a lot
for
of horsepower.
Us.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of torque, more importantly.
Torque.
I think stock, what, 600 pounds?
Something
I think.
In that neighborhood.
Yeah, just really outrageous.
It'll be outrageous, as you say, it shows.
Yeah.
It'll attract a lot of attention. And being that I own Reincarnation, that's half the reason we're doing it.
It's the anti-Tesla, that car, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's the car that we'll remember when our grandkids are driving electric cars. We'll remember Jim's 8-liter V10 56 Bel Air.
We call it very affectionately the Shaviper, and it will be long remembered for its ability to rid almost an entire zip code of mosquitoes on request. That thing can puke out exhaust fumes like no other. Another point of pride for me.
Linda, you like fast cars. You've been around fast cars. You know friends that have Lamborghinis and McLarens and whatnot. You ever been in a Viper or around a Viper? What are your thoughts?
I've seen them. I've never been in them. They sound exciting.
They're fun, but any Ferrari or Lamborghini or certainly McLaren will run circles around it. But again, you got to look at the dating.
Yeah.
Vipers came out in the 90s. That's a long time ago.
It is 3 years
ago. So it's rear-wheel drive, and it's an antique dinosaur design, as I say. But it was the only game in town then.
Yeah. It's like a lightweight steam locomotive, kind of, is the attitude behind the Viper. It goes like stink, and that's about it.
Yeah, from one water tower to the next.
It eats a lot of water.
Substitute gas station at
yeah.
will. I mean, I've got a Ford Expedition, I'm sorry, with which I tow when I have to take cars for something to Denver. I've gotten as high as 6 miles to a gallon.
Goodness.
Downhill with the engine off.
So,
Americans, when it comes to making wasteful vehicles, nobody holds a candle.
And we're going to talk about that next segment. One of the things that Linda and I was talking about a few weeks ago is what the domestic manufacturers are doing in 1957 and then what the European manufacturers were doing in 1957. We're going to talk about that next segment. Real quick, do you have another favorite car of yours that you've sold or still kept or that you want to tell
us
about?
Well, I'm a big fan of the Jaguar XKE. It's the car that Enzo Ferrari himself called the most beautiful car ever built. And there's a reason for that. It simply is. I own a Series 1 car and a pair of Series 2 cars, and they're just my favorite car on the planet. Late 50s, early 60s design, but boy, the Brits got it right. You just mentioned comparing domestic versus imported designs in 57. In 57, you know, Ferrari was building 500 TRs. Jaguar was building XK150s and about to move into
most
the E-Type. Yeah, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
The early Lotuses, oh my God.
So we're going to talk more about that next segment.
Yeah.
Jim, thank you very much. Thanks for your time. Linda, always
Sounds
a pleasure.
Good. Absolutely.
We'll
so
be
before
right back.
Before we let you go, Jim, what's your website? You have a Facebook page?
Oh, we are at reincarnationauto.com, and we're located down by Platt & Powers. And if you're ever in the neighborhood, please, in like old cars, stop in anytime. It's like kind of a museum tour.
Sounds
Our
good.
Shop is very much like the ones you see on TV. It's just, I'm here to tell you, you can't really restore a car in 1 hour.
No, I got you. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you in the next segment. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Linda.
Visit Montservino Urban Winery at 4655 Town Center Drive, Suite 130 near Platt and Murray, and spend time,
like we did,
with Matt and Katie in their cozy tasting room sampling beautifully made wines
and handcrafted Boxing Brothers hard cider.
Come find your favorite. Cars and Crafts and KPPF remind you to drink responsibly. Welcome back. You're listening to Cars and Crafts with Linda and David and Jim. DJ in the far background. We're having a good time.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for coming by again.
Hi, guys.
Jim owns and runs and operates, and he's there every day, a shop called Reincarnation on Terminal Avenue. What's the address?
Yes. 6085 Terminal, right by Platt and Powers.
Okay.
And how long have you been at that location?
6 years.
Okay.
Brand new building for us.
Nice.
Yeah.
Jim invites people to come and stop by. Linda and I stopped by. We didn't give Jim any notice. I hadn't seen Jim in a couple of years. He immediately gave us the whole tour.
We got a tour. It was great. We were greeted by the wonderful puppy poodle,
Remy Martin.
Remy Martin.
He drooled all over everything and everyone, but it was wonderful. Thank
He's
you.
He's well trained.
Yeah.
So one of the things we want to talk about this segment, Jim's touched everything, domestic and European, talking about sheet metal and cars anyway.
I was going to say there are still some outstanding warts, but we're not going to go there.
Trying to keep you out of trouble.
I don't touch things anymore.
You weren't part of the Catholic Church at any point in your past.
I'm a recovering Catholic.
Okay.
That's true.
Very good.
And that's a whole other story.
Good
I'm sorry.
Grief.
That's another show. Linda has a therapy show Thursday afternoons. We can get into that.
There you go.
Yeah.
I have a different couch and a different studio. That's a whole different topic.
So Lindy and I had a conversation when we first was putting this show together. We were talking about the differences, specifically in 1957. And that started because my family's big fans of the 57 Chevy. It started with my dad. It was his favorite car ever. There's a whole story behind that, which Jim helped us with. And this is one of the things about reincarnation that's so impressive. We had this car for, I'm embarrassed to tell you how many years it was, but I bought a running driving car in California with the intention of making it a gift. It was a family project to my father. And my father went from being 63 years old and looking forward to being able to drive a car like that to getting close to 80 and the car still wasn't finished. So in comes reincarnation. And this is what you do. And meeting Jim and going through the process of building that car, he had tons of great stories about people that had even, you know, far worse stories than I did. One that I remember specifically, it's kind of off topic, but you're full of great stories, was the guy that had the, I think it was an SS-396 Chevelle.
Mm-hmm.
He had sent the guy $1,000 a month for 10 years or something. You tell the story.
Wow.
He was a hedge fund manager and business I'm not totally familiar with. He had an SS-396, late 60s, that belonged originally to his wife's father. He bought it new. It had lived in St. Louis, and St. Louis invented rust. So this car was a rot box. It was history. He dropped it off at a shop who shall remain nameless in Fountain. He had the car for, I think, 11 or 12 years. I've forgotten now. We finished it years ago. And he simply sent the guy a check for 10 grand every year. He never checked on the car.
Wow.
And he's trotting around the globe. He's working out of Manhattan. He's virtually never here. And when he's here, he's got a wife and kids. And, you know,
they don't pay attention.
The car was pretty secondary as far as priorities go. And he never checked on it. By the time he did, he was sitting at $120,000 in the car. And the owner of the shop, who shall remain nameless and is still in Fountain, he cashed the checks and he stripped the car down to the frame and body and sold it all on eBay. This is a matching numbers SS-396 that her father bought.
Family new. Car.
And what?
Everything is gone. Oh. Matching numbers, engine, tranny, rear end. Those are history. Suspension, interior. It's a factory air car. They don't even repop that dashboard. We had to find one out of a wreck. The convertible top, the seats, the doors.
It was a convertible. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. It was a ragtop. The front fenders, both front and rear hoods, the bumpers, the everything.
Oh,
sold
my goodness.
On eBay. Hell of a guy, apparently. I didn't meet him. So what we picked up.
He's very persuasive and charming, obviously.
His dog lives with him at the shop, I'm told, so it's got to have a good smell. But
nice.
Aroma aside, he called and he said, can you save this project? And I said, bring it in. We'll send. Now, we had to go, of course, with the sheriff and the usual. This happens all the time. About 40% of our completions came in from cars who just took the money, cashed the checks, end of story. It happens all the time. Happened to you on the 57, I'll bet.
It didn't really. It went through a number of different shops. The mistake that we made was my brother's very, very talented with sheet metal and that kind of stuff. And he decided that the car wasn't sitting on the frame properly. And so he decided to take the car off the frame. And that was the downfall.
Big mistake, yeah.
Yeah, I would rather have just sold the car as is. It was a running driving car and just bought a different car. If we were going to go to that length. But anyway, everybody has a story.
Yeah.
And, you know, thank you, Jim. Thank you, Reincarnation, for completing that car. My sister drives it. It's gorgeous. You did it in a Chrysler Ghost gray. It's a gorgeous car.
It's
all original
car.
Interior. interior. It's got interceptor drivetrain, modified front suspension, disc brakes, sway bars, etc. Beautiful car. Turned out great. Thank you very much. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. And it's unfortunate and a really a black eye to our industry that 40% of our completions, our deliveries, came in from other shops here in town. Very common. It's a shame.
It's hard to do. I know as I get older, I'm very aware before I take a bolt out of something because I have to put it back at some point. It's so easy to take stuff apart, but to actually put it back together is a whole another level of commitment. And as you're pointing out, not very many people have that.
Well, and I cheat a little there because I use simple technology, digital cameras. Every one of my five techs has a digital camera. At noon every day, I sit down and upload them onto Google Photos, and I send the photos to the owners of the car, and they're dated. And here's exactly what we did on your car.
That was so impressive
today.
When you first started doing that with our car. I was so impressed with that. It's so smart. It's such an obvious thing to do. It's brilliant.
Thank you. I haven't reinvented the wheel. I didn't slice bread for the first time. It just made sense. Show these people this is an expensive hobby. And as you proved on your car, and this guy with the Chevelle is the textbook case, it's very easy to lose your you-know-what.
Yeah.
Financially in this business. So if somebody's anxious to send you photos of progress every single day, that certainly speaks to integrity and the rate of completion.
Exactly. And it also counteracts your non-answer to the question, Jim, when's it going to be done and how much is it going to cost me?
There are no answers. It's that simple. If you need answers for those two, you should be collecting something different than cars. Coins, there's always stamps. You can collect comic books.
Ex-wives.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, I've got a ton of those. And,
you haven't restored any of them? Come on, Jim.
I don't restore them. I've given up.
Okay.
Yeah, it pays to know when to walk.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much,
okay,
Linda.
Good job.
Yeah. And I'm glad I never met you.
Okay.
But that aside.
So let's talk about, I'll save Jim and myself here. Linda's fine, of course, always. 1957, the 57 Chevy Bel Air. I've said this before, when people think about a 50s American car, they think about the 57 Bel Air. The better looking version of that, to me, and probably the greatest car of that time period, is a 57 Eldorado Baritz, the Cadillac. I just think it's absolutely gorgeous and a total statement to wretched excess. The amount of chrome and stainless on that car.
It's stainless steel roof. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me? That car weighs 7,500 pounds, 8,000 pounds?
Roughly. I did one for Tony Fico up in Denver. It's almost he's got Duesenbergs and such. It's darn near the centerpiece of his collection.
Wow.
It's so outrageous.
Just outrageous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Beautiful car.
So this is what the domestic manufacturers were doing in 1957. 57 Chevy is great to look at. It does not turn a corner on its own. It does not stop. It does not go. It's, it's an ox cart, really, that has a great trim on it, right? This is what the domestic, we had the turnpike system, thank you to Eisenhower, I believe, and cars were intended to go in a straight line for hundreds of miles at 70 miles an hour, and that was it, versus what was happening over in Europe. And a lot of it comes from a lot of factors, Jim, and I'm leading you in a certain direction. The war, the narrowness of the roads, the scarceness of resources, but talk more about the thinking behind European cars in 57 versus the Americans.
Well, the Europeans stayed in a mindset for many years that we got away from years ago. We got into the corporate thing, the Dodge brothers, Henry Ford and his whole team with Firestone and all the different people that contributed to the Model A, Model T, if you go back that far, production line. We were all about, as Americans always are, we were all about quantity versus quality. Ferraris, you go back to a Ferrari in 57, there might be 10 of this model. There might be 50 of that model, but that's it. How many 57 Chevys were built? I don't think we know. There were probably over a million. So unique, hardly. Quality control, forget that. But they changed everything every year in the appearance department, and that's how they kept an audience. And they built a car that was perfectly capable of getting you to work. The Ferraris were perfectly capable of getting you to the races.
And getting you back home again, ideally.
After you've raced.
Right.
Yeah, you put the number circle on and you go out and race for 2 or 3 hours and then you drive it home.
So a 57 250 pontoon fender Testarossa, $50 million? Is that a fair price for that car
today? One just sold for 45. You're real close. Yeah.
Just fantastic. Also, you want to talk about German cars, but for me, the iconic German car 57 is the Gullwing. The Gullwing shocking
Absolutely.
In so many respects. But
last year production, yes.
The contrast, if you park a Gullwing next to an Eldorado Biritz, it tells you everything you want to know about what happens around the globe. Mm-hmm. But talk about, you want to talk about German cars from that time period.
Well, and having done one of each of the 300SL, I did a Gullwing and a Roadster. The Roadster was the 92nd from last car built in 62. The Gullwing was a 57, last year of production for it. They were made, they built 1,800 Gullwings and I think around 17 and change of the Roadster. But the attention to detail, again, million-dollar cars today. And I've driven them repeatedly. I've been very lucky in my career to get behind the wheel of some outrageous European rides. To think of that Biritz going lumbering down the highway.
Yeah.
And bouncing from curb to curb, trying to do a straight line. And then you hop in any German car, almost, of the era. Not an NSU, but a Mercedes.
Nice.
Yeah. And Auto Union, as they were called before they were Audis.
Exactly.
Such cars were fabulous. The Italians, forget about it. They just have always done it perfect. Italians were always about racing, and it shows to this day. Any new Ferrari or Lamborghini. McLaren's the only guy from off the boot. You know, they came out of England. But those three have the top cars on the planet as manufacturers.
Yeah, for a supercar you could drive every day, I think the McLaren is the clear choice. They really changed the mindset. You know, Lamborghini had the reputation, it's great to look at, it's a poster on your wall, but you really don't want to drive one. You really don't want to try to live with one every day. As an example, let's talk about, since we're on the subject, the Countach, the classic car from that time period. Everybody had the poster on their wall, either that or Pamela Anderson. But
I'm willing to bet Linda did. But almost every guy had the Countach.
She has one now. She's been introduced.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. And if you've ever been unlucky enough to drive a Countach, it's one of the worst.
You can't, even just to sit in one.
Yeah. And try and see anything. How many fingers am I holding up? Where are you?
Well, the Italians didn't care about ergonomics, and it wasn't even a word until probably 15 years ago. But because of the large wheel wells up front, it intrudes into the pedal box. So your legs wander off toward the right, but they can only go so far because you have this gigantic tunnel that runs down the middle of the car. So you're really pinched in there. Then the steering wheel is never centered at your chest. The steering wheel always has to go in some goofy direction because it couldn't get it lined up right.
Well off, so.
And then classic Italians is that you're sitting on a park bench and the steering wheel is pointed at your nose, but not really at your nose. It's going to miss your nose by 6 inches one direction or the other. And then you can't see out of the car.
Yeah.
And let's add 500 horsepower to that.
And visuals were overrated. Do you really need to see the road? Let's just drive. But it sounds like something for Hollywood. But no, the Countach was, he built tractors.
Yeah.
And he wanted to get out of the tractor business desperately. Signor, I forget his name.
Ferruccio.
Thank you. Lamborghini. And he wanted to quit making tractors and he wanted to make cars people would drool over. And he got off on the right foot.
Allegedly, he was rejected by Ferrari or something. Ferrari wouldn't sell him a car.
Yeah.
And that motivated him. Who knows if that's true or not. One of my favorite cars of all time is his first GT. The 350 GT became the 400 GT. That is an absolutely gorgeous car.
And a very conventional design. And it was, you say 35 or 4,500. They were simply 3.5 liters or 4.5 liters. And back in 69, 70, I was lucky enough to have a customer with a 450. And I got to put a lot of miles on it. And though it was a typical front engine, rear wheel drive.
GT style.
Design, exactly. Grand touring style. It was so much fun to drive. And you could get out on an interstate late at night, take it up around 150, 160. 60, and it just settled in and was very happy you were driving.
That's awesome.
What a great car.
My favorite Lamborghini of all time is a Miura. I'm probably not alone in
that. Can't beat it.
Yeah, have you been around a Miura? Have you done one? Have you been in one? Do you know somebody?
I've not even sat in one. They're so rare, and I wish I could say I've driven one, because even though it's, again, antique technology, it is truly mid-engine. The early drivetrain was such a dinosaur, the oil pan had the transmission in it.
Yeah.
They were not separate.
It was all
they
one casting.
Same oil.
It was the transaction. It was transaxle and the crankcase was all one casting.
They
ridiculous.
All blew up.
Crazy.
There was no hope. They all blew up.
You can't handle that many different stresses in that many different directions.
And they're still worth millions today. And it's one of the most beautiful cars. It's got to be, I mean, it's a MoMA thing. You know, it's got to be in the Museum of Outrageous Modern Art.
So back to 57, you mentioned Ferrari, what they were doing. Alfa was still alive and kicking in 57. 57. Maserati was alive and kicking in 57. What are some of your favorite cars from the Italians that weren't Ferrari from that time period?
Well, you just named a couple of good ones. The 3500 Maserati GT was an outrageous car. Grossly underrated because of
beautiful car.
Yeah, well, it was beautiful, but fairly pedestrian looks as they went forward.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, front engine, rear wheel drive. But, and this is, they were on the cusp of understanding mid-engine because of Jackie Stewart, because of Lotus. They decided, hey, let's put an engine in the middle. And as I mentioned in another segment, things go right from F1 to the street. Doesn't take a day or two. It takes 5 years. But mid-engine technology, it took about a 5 year. There was a gap before race cars and supercars were then mid-engine. And now it's come to us. You can go buy a new Corvette today for $80,000 and compete with virtually every car we've just mentioned.
And unlike most Italian cars, I think there's room for a set of golf clubs in a Corvette. I think they did figure that out.
They understand us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that drives me nuts about mid-engine sports cars, and Linda and I have talked about this, is that if you own a Lamborghini or something like this and you want to take a trip with your wife, girlfriend to Phoenix and play some golf, you have to ship your clubs ahead of time and probably your luggage because there's room in the car for her handbag and that's it.
And I typically ship the girlfriend as well because I found that the wife and girlfriend don't travel well together.
And Probably not.
Well, it's like today you see these things about the people getting taped to their seats. The wife-girlfriend combo can be deadly.
That's a nice thing about a two-seater car is you have to choose one or the other, Jim.
Exactly.
Yeah. A friend of a friend of mine told this story that whenever they had to go on a road trip, he'd start an argument with his wife as soon as he got on the freeway. She would not talk to him the entire trip.
Well, or he would go the route that goes right by the airport and he can get her on a plane instantly.
Yeah. There you go.
You get in the argument within an hour, you're solo. And that's that. Off to the girl's house, the girlfriend's house, and we're going to have a great trip.
This is a whole different segment, guys. Where are we going here?
Linda, forgot you were here.
Oh,
sorry.
Thanks,
I'm not sure if we learned anything about 1957, but we had a great time. Jim, it's been great having you here in the studio.
Thank you.
Linda, always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in. You guys are listening to Cars and Crafts with Jim, David, Linda, 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7.
And stop by and see Jim and his wife. They're there every day, and Remy, the poodle, at his shop, Reincarnation, Colorado Springs. The address,
6085 Terminal Avenue. We're two doors down from the only strip joint in town, and embarrassingly, I've never been there.
Such a smart guy.
Stop by and see Jim.
Keep your things separate.
Scheduling's everything.
Had a great time with you guys today. Looking forward to the next show. What are we going to talk about next time, David?
We'll be out at car shows and your favorite local brewery, meeting and talking with personalities and entrepreneurs building cars.
And filling kegs.
Every week here on Cars and Crafts.
Stay tuned. See you next time on Cars and Crafts, 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM.
The power
of people.